Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Eyewitness reports claiming that an unidentified flying object was seen low in the skies above Black Castle have been roundly dismissed.
Beep the meat.
Beep the Meep, folks. Star of his own upcoming series on this very channel tonight. Can you tell us what it's called again, Beep?
Yes, it's called Hall to Open.
Hall to Open?
Yes, and what do you do?
My greatest pleasure comes from inflicting pain, and I am very pleased to see you. Meep, meep.
Hello, and welcome to Pull to Open. Normally an ongoing quest to watch all of Doctor Who in random order, but today we've got something very special for you. My name is Chris Taylor.
And meep, meep, I'm Pete Paschal. And yes, it's a very different kind of episode today. Today we are going to be talking about a legendary adventure in the Doctor Who canon. Or is it in the canon? We'll actually probably talk about that. There is
a story. What even is Doctor Who canon? Yes.
Right? there is a story that we're going to hear a lot about and actually have heard a lot about for the last little while. But come November 25th, everyone who's watching Doctor Who will be talking about it. And it is, of course, entitled The Star Beast. Which,
that's right.
Before it was a 60th anniversary special for the show, was a comic strip in the pages of Doctor Who Weekly.
That's so right. And this is one of those points where I can proudly say I was there. I was one of those kids reading Doctor Who Weekly when the Star Beast came along. Pete, I believe you encountered it a little bit later when it came out in a Marvel Comics edition.
This very Marvel comic I'm holding
yes,
up right here.
You have it.
Two parts.
I love it. And not to just sort of immediately blow you out of the water straight out of the gate, but here we have the hardback edition of the complete Dave Gibbons collection of Doctor Who. Dave Gibbons, of course, if you know Watchmen, he's the artist on that. He's the artist on this. He's one of the reasons that the Star Beast is so well remembered. He's my favorite comic book artist of all time. And I just like, oh, look, the front cover has fallen open and there's his autograph. God. From where Dude. I interviewed him in 2017 at Comic-Con.
Nice.
Got him to sign this and Watchmen. He drew a Rorschach in my Watchmen. It was one of the finest moments of my life. But
well,
yes.
I can't top that, but I do have the Doctor Who Omnibus, which also has the Star Beast, which is worth checking out just because the colors are a little different in this from the original comic. So
Yeah. I've got the colorized edition too. And yeah, I remember the black and white from back in the day. And obviously Russell T. Davies remembers them as well, because he specifically zeroed in on the need to do a story like this, that it slotted into his plan for the specials, and it just that idea wouldn't let go, and so here we are waiting for the verge on the screen.
So when you guys are hearing this, it's probably we're a week out from the actual Star Beast, the special, which we've seen trailers for and have a title card for, and is clearly there's so much homage, so much taken from the comic. There's the I believe they're the Wrath Warriors or Wrath. I don't even know how to pronounce it. We'll find out, I guess, on November 25th. The Wrath. And, you know, we've seen Beep the Meep. We've seen Beep the Meep speak in the trailer. We've gotten a lot of background in Doctor Who magazine about the voice, which is Miriam Margulies.
Miriam Margulies, Margoyles.
I
don't know if it rhymes with Cleese or Gargoyles, but. Again, we'll find out. We'll find out in all the media. But here we are, while we're waiting for Beep the Meep, we can actually do a review of the original Star Beast, what we decided to do today. Just give you that background if you're watching or listening to this before the first special airs. And if you're listening to it afterwards, don't click away. Like, we've got some background, and we've got the what happened next, right? Because there were sequels, right, Pete?
There were sequels. So Beep the Meep famously debuted in the Star Beast, but that was not his last appearance. Should I say its last appearance? Its last appearance. The Meep went on to do a couple other things. So there was a Star Beast 2. There was a sequel which was not illustrated by Dave Gibbons or written by Pat Mills and John Wagner, who wrote the original one. But it's a fun adventure where actually I won't say too much about it, but at the end of it, the Meep is trapped in a movie. It's actually a Lassie movie. But the reason I know that, because even though I haven't read Starbeast 2 recently, the Ratings War, which is a big Finish short from 2002. It's really short and it's actually free. If you go to the Big Finish website, you could actually go ahead and download it now. You don't have to spend a dime.
Free as of recording time.
Yeah. And it's a neat little adventure with the Colin Baker Doctor and Beep the Meep. And it's fun to hear a voice attached to Beep the Meep. The very first voice, not Miriam Margolyes, but fun nonetheless. So, and you get to hear Colin Baker actually announce Beep the Meep. He actually sort of says that.
It's perfect for Colin Baker's voice. I love that. I also love that the imprisonment in the movie Lassie. So, you know, coming here from Human Nature, in which, you know, the daughter of the family of blood is imprisoned in a mirror or in every mirror, like imprisoning Beep the Meep in a movie. Like that's sort of that level of punishment, right? So it's kind of an interesting connection there.
Definitely on brand for the Doctor, that's for sure.
Yes. Will that level of punishment emerge in the TV special, in the 60th anniversary special version of the Starbeast? We don't know. We know that the original artist and writer have been on set and they love it. They've given it their stamp of approval. Everything at least looks great. So while we're waiting for that, we will dive into the actual Starbeast, the original Starbeast, and still the best, you might say.
In a moment, though. But first, everyone, housekeeping, which of course means I'm going to have to tell you about pull2open.net, our website where you can actually subscribe to the Pull to Open newsletter. You can get that every week delivered to your inbox, which gives you also full notes of the show that we use to refer to when we're making the podcast. That's fun stuff. Plus, you can also go to patreon.com/pull2open, become a patron of the show and support. And we have some special stuff coming up.
Some special commentaries. Yeah, we will actually be in your ears one more time talking about Beep the Meep. Maybe many more times. Who knows? Could become a recurring villain if popular enough. But for the 60th, at least, we will be doing some non-random hot takes on the specials. So watch out for that shortly after each of the specials drops. We'll be getting those up as fast as we can.
If you're listening to this right when we drop it, 1 week from today, we'll have some hot takes on the televised version of the Starbeast. So watch for it.
That's right.
All right. Well, the ways we can do all this, folks, bringing this podcast to you, which is so much fun, is because of a little service we use to record it, and that is Zencastr. When we started out podcasting, we were really a lot like the Doctor, really not quite sure what we were doing with all the equipment we had. But ever since we switched to Zencastr, it's been a dream. It's actually a lot like having a control chair with stilts. It's that convenient. All you do is create your recording room in the cloud, send the link to your guests, and Zencastr handles the rest. It records studio quality sound and video up to 4K, plus it has all the tools you need to host, create, and distribute your podcast, all in one place. Whether you have your own podcast, and I know some of you do, or you're thinking about starting one, we'd strongly encourage you to check out Zencastr. So set your browser coordinates to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code IPUSH. That's IPUSH. And you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences that we do for all our podcasting and content needs. It is time to share your story. Remember, the site is zencastr.com/pricing and the code is IPUSH.
And remember also the URL is youtube.com/pull2open. Yes, YouTube, an up-and-coming video service, which is where you can find us. Hi there. Hi, everyone.
Hi, YouTubers.
Hi, YouTubers.
Good to see you. See us waving.
OG title to see us waving, to see all of our Easter eggs in the background. Like the video you're watching, subscribe, hit the bell icon for new information. Check out our Toymaker plot summary, speaking of the 60th specials. We've got a whole podcast on the Celestial Toymaker that's up there. The plot summary where I do our TLDW, our regular feature, summarizing the original plot of the original, you might say, Celestial Toy Maker, is just going nuts. Thousands of people watching that thing, so go check it out.
And feel free to drop us a line wherever we are in the socials. We're at TikTok at Pull to Open, also Blue Sky at Pull to Open, and Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at Pull to Open 63. And scene. It is now time to talk about the Star Beast, everyone. And we're actually going to do something special. Normally, we do a little TLDW, where we summarize the plot in record time. We don't really need to do that now, because we can actually just read through the plot.
That's right.
With the comics in front of us.
We're just two Doctor Who fans standing in front of a bunch more Doctor Who fans reading through a Doctor Who comic and remembering all of this. And what I love, first of all, like, we're going to talk about a lot of details. We're going to get into Beat the Meep and Sharon, you know, the first companion of color, all of that. But first of all, can I just give a shout out to Angela Rippon?
You can. Who is Angela Rippon?
Angela Rippon. You may not know, but she, first of all, she's the voice of at the beginning of Star Beast. That's why I mentioned her. But secondly, she was an actual newsreader. On the BBC. We recently ran to the Day of the Daleks. The BBC used one of their actual news reporters, something the BBC did a lot in various shows. They crop up comedy shows, etc. And apparently
we just talked about that in Day of the Daleks.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. And Angela Rippon, there's a very recognizable Angela Rippon on page 2 of the Star Beast.
That's who that is?
Okay, yes. I
feel like we're going to have to clip in a lot of stuff here. I'm going to enjoy this edit. But I found that to be such a weird face with maybe it's just the colorization on the original version. She's like green eyeshadow or something.
Huh.
And she looked a little weird. Alien futury, which I found it a little difficult to place the time on this. They never explicitly say this is contemporary, that it's 1980, which one of the things I would say is I think they probably should have.
I think it is sort of established in either in Star Beast 2 or one of the later Beat the Meep appearances that this was, you know, retroactively, they established that this was, this all took place in Black Castle in 1980.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so different coloring for sure in the omnibus version.
Yep.
And it doesn't look quite as weird. I might recommend the omnibus version, even though there's something to be said for the big primary colors in the original, not the original, yeah, but the Marvel Comics version.
Dave Gibbons approved version, I think, is the same as the omnibus.
Before we get into it, I want to sort of set the stage on Doctor Who comics for a little bit. So just a sort of uber comment about Doctor Who weekly comics and sort of basically I just want to highlight the weirdness of them. So, like, it's fair to say, you know, if Doctor Who is like sort of a crazy sci-fi fantasy with limitless possibilities, which, you know, I think is an apt description of it, pretty fairly accurate. I mean, that goes double for the comic strip. And yeah. I'd probably say triple for the early days of Doctor Who Weekly, which kind of it's kind of even more bonkers than the show. And I feel like, you know, Star Beast is an example of this, but there's a lot of other ones like the Iron Legion and whatever else. And I do feel like if you are a fan of the show, that's a little jarring at first.
Yes.
Kind of like, oh, this is just like really nuts and adds a sort of a bit of unreality to it. And it's exacerbated a little bit, that feeling, because they didn't really have contemporary companions for a long time.
Correct.
They had their own comic strip companions. So you're kind of like, in your head, you're trying to wonder where this fits in the show.
And we're so used to it now with Big Finish, but it was very unusual at the time.
Yeah, I'll just say none of this is really to say the comic strip's bad.
No.
I'm just saying if you were looking for adventures exactly like the TV show, it would be jarring. You'd be kind of like, oh, what? But that said, they make the most of the medium, which is great.
And they were very well served, and Dave Gibbons talks about this quite a lot, very well served by the fact that the Doctor on screen at that time was Tom Baker, who is so cartoonish himself.
Yeah.
Big teeth and curls. You know, Dave Gibbons is like he was a dream to draw. And he's so iconic. The scarf, I mean, and he looks amazing, amazing. This sort of cemented my love for Dave Gibbons as a child. I loved a lot of the stuff he did in 2000 AD. But the fact that he could render the Doctor almost better than he was on the screen. You know, and some of these stories were better. I got to say, the fact that they were kind of out there and had license to just try everything. I mean, I love, you mentioned the Iron Legion. Absolutely love the Iron Legion. Really, yeah. Still do. That one of the best imaginings of a galactic Roman Empire that's ever appeared in science fiction, which has had
also mental. Like I say, like these are just the strips are just mental. They really went for it, and you got to admire it for that. Okay, so back to the story
is almost compared to all of that. It's almost the most down to earth one. Quite literally, it opens with a spaceship crashing, right? But it does, and then we go straight to what you feel is almost like a New Who opening. And it's kind of like the Star Beast kind of set a template for New Who almost.
Yeah, you don't start with the Doctor.
Yeah.
There's this crash spaceship.
With Sharon and her friend Fudge. And Fudge. Yes, Fudge.
Was that a common name in the late 70s, early 80s?
It's a common kind of thing you can imagine as a nickname.
Yeah.
Especially if he was small and thin. There were ads for a finger of Fudge. Which is a British chocolate. A finger of fudge is just enough.
So I've got a lot of praise for Dave Gibbons. You already said some of the stuff I wanted to say, like how great he is at depicting Tom Baker. The Meep is inspired. But I got to open with a tiny bit of criticism. And the only criticism I have on him in this is that I don't think he's particularly good at drawing kids. And you don't really get the sense from how he's drawn Fudge and Sharon that they're supposed to be school children, right? You kind of have to infer that from their outfits. And again, you know, they're clearly like high school age or whatever, but it's a little, you kind of like when they sort of make reference to them being school kids, whatever, later, you're kind of like, really, what? That's really the only criticism I have of the art. Otherwise, like this, look at this first shot of Beep the Meep. Oh my God. Just look at that.
I mean, that is so incredible. Iconic. It's so iconic. It's been repeated everywhere. In discussing the Star Beast, you know, anytime anyone brings it up, that's the panel they show, and it's right there on page one.
It's either that one or the one where he pulls out the gun, which is the iconic one where he's evil.
Uh-oh, so spoilers.
Both of those, but yes. Well, sorry.
Yes, if you've gotten this far, remaining unspoiled for the big spoiler of the Star Beast in the 60th anniversary special, is the Beep the Meep is evil.
That's right. Even though it looks like at the beginning, this is the whole thing where the Warath are the evil ones. So there's these insectoid creatures who are in a strangely phallic looking spaceship. It's triple phallus is there. It's pursuing Beep the Meep. But there's this insectoid race of sort of big eyed, big clawed aliens, which also have tongues that have multiple tentacles on them, which I thought was a pretty inspired thing.
So it's definitely, you know, if you summarize the whole story, is basically that is the learning from it is like, do not judge by appearances, right? It's a it's a classic thing. It's a thing we were telling kids and a lot of kids' stories in the 70s. It was, you know, very, very simple, basic meat. But yes, the Rawarth are insectoid and Beep the Meep is almost impossibly Disney cute. And the way that Gibbons draws him, you kind of know from the start something's up. Certainly reading it as an adult, you're like, yeah, he's just a bit too, this is a bit too, the eyes are a bit too big.
Yeah.
He's drawing just a bit too cartoony.
Now, I will say the Warath, as they're depicted here in the first few parts, they do seem really evil. So they kidnap the Doctor, who is just sort of randomly landed on their ship, and they destroy K-9. I mean, they knock his head off so the Doctor can still repair him. And they capture the Doctor, knock him out. And they do something very strange, very unusual to the Doctor, which is they take him to the stick bay, strip him naked, and decide to implant a bomb in him, in his stomach.
Yes.
So the ship's surgeon does this.
One of my favorite lines comes from the ship's surgeon, one of my favorite lines in the whole thing. Where he says, oh, you want me to operate on him? His skeleton is inside his body. He's revolting. and I love that. Just, you know, says a lot about alien.
Which is funny because we find out later the Warath are actually genetically engineered from a bunch of different other species to be sort of these warrior policemen types. Again, I think this is sort of an indication. Maybe they kind of didn't quite know where they were going with this story when they first came in. I think you're right that just by the look of Beep the Meep, they had an idea to flip the switch on that and turn him bad. But the Ra'ath are pretty bad themselves early on, and they sort of operate on the Doctor, turn him into a living bomb with the intention of detonating the bomb once he gets close to Beep the Meep. So that that happens pretty soon. It's I don't know how many parts are in the issue one. I think it's three. This might be the end of, but the Doctor eventually lands on Earth. You know, he comes to meet Sharon and Fudge and sees Beep the Meep. And
I will say, before he gets to Earth, there is one more. He picks up a TV signal and it's Angela Rippon again. So,
oh, yeah. She's everywhere.
She's everywhere. I love it. So, yeah.
Overexposed back then.
He goes down to Black Castle. I don't know why they had to make up a name for a British city. Like, if you just make it like London or Blackpool or Birmingham, which is it's probably supposed to be Birmingham because they used to talk about Birmingham, the black stuff, which, you know, coal and tar and, you know, it was, but yeah, a weird choice, well, but I guess comics
overused. They overuse the color black in this one because there's black sun radiation. There's a black hole that comes out later. There's a lot of blackness. It's a theme. Maybe it's foreshadowing. Who knows?
Oh, and K-9 turns into a cat, which is just another one of the example of like how random this is.
It's bonkers, man. These old early comics were totally bonkers.
First of all, they have K-9 in the voice of Leela saying, "I will slit your miserable throat from ear to ear."
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Good John Leeson impression.
I'm not sure I can do meow in a canine voice, though, or purr. But yeah, basically, canine remains that way for the rest of the story.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's one of those things you could see even in the comics, they had to occasionally figure out a way to depower the Doctor by taking away his muscle and then make him even more the underdog. Because once the Doctor has K-9, he's basically got a blaster with him all the time.
Yes.
And this happened often in the TV show as well. So
Doctor shows up. Yeah, he shows up in classic, in classic Rose style. Again, getting very New Who-ish with it. He sort of saves the new companions or his friends for this story by just sort of grabbing them in a moment of peril. Saying, you know, getting the wrath of their backs. Wrath. And then he says a thing when Fudge says, "How did you know that was the right button to press?" When a laser bolt shoots from the ship and destroys the pursuing wrath. "How do you know that was the right button, mate?" And the Doctor says, you can't really imagine Tom Baker saying this. "Oh, level and starship weaponry, Gallifrey comp, come on." now, that's
I could see him saying that up to weaponry. Starship weaponry, come on!
You know what? You know who I could hear saying that? Is Tennant. "Oh, level, starship weaponry, Gallifrey comp, come on! Allons-y!"
It would both work.
So it seems like he's the right Doctor for this story, I think.
True.
You've got to be able to, you know, empathize with the working class kids. We know that the role of Sharon in the comic is basically going to be played by Rose, who is Donna's daughter. Right?
Well, it's all speculation at this point, and this is, you know, stuff we'll get into at the end. But yeah, presumably she will be. She certainly has the same placing as Sharon in the title card that they did for the Starbeast. Right, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think RTD has said something about, you know, Rose goes to find her. But anyway, they bring the Doctor and the Meep home to Fudge's mum, who I think is where Donna and her mum are going to enter in the TV version. The Doctor reveals that he's a living bomb, and then they do this cliffhanger-ish thing, which they've done on the show, and they did in the comic books, where they make it look like the bomb inside the Doctor is going to be detonated. And then when you start again the next week, he's actually got time to scrabble up onto the roof, grab some lead.
Grab some lead, some random lead on the roof of the house. That was hilarious. "I'm just going to get some lead." And it's there like tinfoil, and he just crumples it up over his stomach. And that blocks the signal. Okay. I guess.
They really just emphasized that, like, I mean, the Doctor in the show so rarely did anything like this until New Who, right? I mean, he is in a very working class council estate kind of house, years before the Tylers. And this was also the first time in Doctor Who comics that he'd done this, right? All of his previous adventures were kind of, with the Iron Legion, up in the mythical realms of the galaxy. This is the first, Black Castle is the first time that they'd done what New Who would eventually do over and over, which is, default to a more sort of a working class Doctor Who.
Yeah, absolutely. It's smart. So he gets the lead, puts it on his stomach, and I got to stop this at this point just because it's an interesting just commentary on the Wrath, where they're like, we learn later that they're interstellar cops that are coming after to arrest the Meep, but they seem perfectly content to one, kill it instead of capture it and arrest it, and in the process kill an innocent person, the Doctor, and presumably everybody else around him, including those people. So it's a little like, I don't know if these guys are the good guys, I certainly, soon after this moment where he prevents the detonation, there is the reveal that the Meep is evil, but I don't know if we've really established that the Wrath are the good guys. I feel like they kind of, again, this is looking at this, I'm sure it was kind of made up as they went along to a certain extent. I mean, this is done over 8 issues in Doctor Who Weekly. It's over a couple of months, and they probably had sketched out loosely what the story was, but as they were doing it, they just figured, oh, this will be fun, this will be interesting, this will be a good cliffhanger. But by the end, it seems like they've kind of just forgotten about that. The Doctor's all chummy with the guys who just tried to kill him.
But to go, I mean, the Meep does turn evil in this particular installment.
Right.
And we should say we're on what, the third, fourth installment?
I think it's the fourth. I could be wrong. But the Meep turns evil first, like just to the viewer. I mean, to the reader. You suddenly just on one panel, you see his thoughts and it's like, you stupid earth creatures. It was easy for a superior intelligence to fool you. And his eyes change too. They become a little more cat-like with just slits. Mm. And he sort of talks about or thinks about how he's just this terrible, most high being who is used to being worshipped and having planets tremble before him. And then he whips out his gun and zaps one of the Wrath. And then he keeps sort of making excuses about it. Like, oh, I was just scared. I'm a cute little Meep.
I will say that once again, I feel like this was completely flagged a page earlier when the Meep's eyes get even bigger and you see tears dripping from them. Like, it's so you have to, only the youngest child would read this and not realize what is being signaled at that point. So,
but I got to say, this is where I'd pause and sort of wonder how they're going to reveal this in the show. I will say this is, in terms of a reveal, it's not that great. Although the panel is epic. Oh my God, the Meep with the gun. Perfect. Yes. But the reveal isn't that interesting because you're just suddenly inside his head and you're kind of given that dramatic irony, and dramatic irony is fine, but there really isn't a great reveal later. So when we get into the next part, the Doctor finally sort of sits down with the Wrath at a diner or something and gets the full story on the Meeps and how they were essentially good until a black sun drifted in their solar system, whatever that is, and turned them evil, which is kind of a nutty explanation, but whatever. And so
why I'm thinking that is a perfect place to sub in the toy maker's antics. Bring the toy maker
perhaps that could work,
or could establish the toy maker's power. I created a black sun, Doctor.
A black sun. What even is a black sun? I mean, it's not a black hole.
Evidently. Or black
light.
For those Soundgarden fans, we know what a black hole sun is, don't we?
Oh, that's true.
I will pause before we get there, though, and just mention the Fizzgig, which is a device that the Doctor builds, which, again, feels very New Who-ish, very, very just all-time Doctor-ish. And, like, Doctor just, like, from spare parts, bits of an iron and a flashlight and transistors and things just sort of sticking off it. It's perfect. It's great. And it's, you know, I mean, it doesn't download comics from the future, but it's definitely a machine that goes ding.
He was definitely doing that kind of stuff in the classic series. I remember when Pertwee did something similar in the Time Monster, just grabbed a bunch of crap and turned into some kind of device.
I love that that unites all the threads.
Starts zapping people left and right again. It's making excuses to Sharon, and he's saying like, oh, I'm actually just stunning them, even then though he's killing them. But you never get a reveal. You never actually get an evil reveal where Sharon suddenly sees him unmasked and he's unmasked to everyone. He just activates the Black Sun drive on the ship, and then suddenly everyone's kind of a zombie slave of his. So I think that's what we're missing. And I hope that's one of the things they alter in the TV version, that we get sort of some kind of unmasking scene where suddenly either the viewer or the characters or both at the same time just get like, oh, actually, by the way, I'm evil. And he just, you know, shoots someone we care about or something like that.
Right. Well, I will also say, you may remember, Pull to Open listeners may remember that we had one of our super fans listen to 89 episodes of this here podcast while cleaning buses, and made a request of the randomizer to give us more bus-related stories, and we talked about, well, what that might be. There's definitely reason to suspect that the Star Beast is going to be one, because the Doctor does actually get onto a bus, is told that he can't bring pets on, except on a lead, wraps his scarf around the Meep's neck to imitate a leash. I mean, it's a New Who-ish level of sort of comedy here. Like, this is almost being played too much for laughs, but you can kind of believe it, right?
Did he ever use the scarf as a leash in the TV series? I think this is just genius. I think it's great when the Doctor uses the scarf.
Every other version, but perhaps not so.
He's sometimes used it to trip people or whatever, but yeah, it's just really smart. Okay, so everybody's zombified. The Doctor isn't. Sharon tries to kill him. The Meep is now triumphantly on his stilt walking thing. So this, he's apparently, I don't know if they built this really quickly because he's in a steel factory or just something he had on the ship, but he's got this thing where he can just kind of walk around on a tripod essentially and zap people. So the Doctor trips him up with the scarf. There you go. There's the tripping with the scarf.
Yep.
And he gets in the ship and manages to monkey around with the Meep's drive. Mm-hmm. And so even though the Meep captures him, he decides that he's going to use his jump drive and or whatever it's called, his Black Sun drive, which will, of course, destroy Black Castle and get it sucked into a black hole. They say it's Black Castle and not the entire world. Although I don't know why the world wouldn't be sucked into the black hole too.
But it's very, very limited effect there.
Limited range. But what's happened is that the Doctor has blunted the effect of it, essentially, with what he did. Mm. And so it's only sucked into the hole for a second. It comes back out, but they have to escape in the TARDIS. So he gets everybody in the TARDIS, everybody who is doing stuff for the Meep, which is like the whole population of that factory and people around it. And everybody's in. And the Meep, who thinks he's just zipped off to the other side of the galaxy, has not. And the Wrath grab him and arrest him. And there it is.
And that's it. And then Sharon becomes the latest companion on the TARDIS. And
not before she gives the Meep what for.
Yes, indeed.
Declaring to the Meep she hates it. And you're horrible.
You're horrible. After the Meep tries one last time to turn on the waterworks.
Yeah.
Sharon doesn't fall for it. So therefore she is a worthy companion, although K-9 still talks like a cat. They have a not particularly great way of wrapping it up, it has to be said, with Sharon sort of comparing the Doctor's life to, you know, the life that she knows of nosy neighbors and bills and bosses. And she says, I couldn't imagine you with a mortgage. And he says, I'd rather face the Black Guardian. just a sort of like, you almost expect it to like freeze frame, like 1970 sitcom style.
Totally.
You know, well, the laugh track plays. Yeah, so that's not and great.
Next issue, join the Dr. Sharon and Kana in Devil Spawn.
In the Wild Blue Yonder. Oh, no, wait.
You could do that. You did Next Time trailers in the comics, even though they didn't do them in the show at the time.
I mean, this is just, it feels so RTD-ish, doesn't it? Like, that's kind of the top line on this. Like,
I would say for sure, of all the showrunners we've known since New Who came out, RTD is the one to adapt this, no question.
The doctor sitting around the dining table with the Wrath while they're having cake, and then the Wrath kind of literally offer one of their own claws to defend himself. I love that. The doctor using not a paper aeroplane, but a paper starship, which is apparently something that he used to do in school.
A lot of references to what he did in Gallifrey in school.
Yeah, right. And that definitely, given that we've been to the Mythmakers recently, where the Doctor tries to pass off a paper aeroplane as the heights of technology to Odysseus when he's trying not to build the Trojan horse. This is evidently, this is in line with that Doctor, right? He thinks paper aeroplanes are cool and the height of technology.
One of these days, he's going to convince someone to use his paper airplane idea to do something with it. It's all very fun. Now, I'm almost tempted at the end there, because Sharon turns on the Meep in such a big way. I'm kind of almost tempted to find sort of meaning in the story of, like, is this a loss of innocence story, because the Meep is so innocent, and the Meep essentially represents our childhood. Sharon turns on it, you know, declares she hates it. And is she now a grown up because of this? It's like, no, I think that's really too much. I think this is literally, like we said at the beginning, this is purely don't judge on appearances. It's really not much more simpler than that. It's sort of Galaxy 4 all over again. And
pretty much.
That's a healthy message. It's totally fun.
And something else to fit it into the vein of old Who rather than new Who. The Doctor basically turns the TARDIS into a taxi service.
Okay.
Just as he does for the policeman in Black Orchid.
With all the people in it at the end.
He gets everyone in. He can't even get through to the controls himself. So I wonder if we're going to get some version of that. That seems like a little too far.
Yeah.
RTD sort of had as full a TARDIS as he's ever going to get in, you know, Journey's End.
The sign should really say, pull to open, ask about my group rates.
That's right. Yes, he is at this moment operating a taxi service. So no wonder Rory's dad got confused.
I prefer TARDIS XL. what's the black car service now? TARDIS luxury? TARDIS something?
I don't know, but personally, I opt for TARDIS wait and save. if you can just wait 15 years. Then you'll get a cheaper TARDIS along. So that's my plan. Save a bit of money.
Cool. So it seems to me, from while they're doing the Star Beast in the show, that they're going to definitely not consider this canon, which is to say the Beep the Meep in the show that we're about to see will be the first time the TV Doctor has encountered Beep the Meep, which is going to be a bit difficult to reconcile in terms of people placing all the things in the same continuity. But I mean, we've had that issue before. And certainly if you listen to last week's podcast about human nature and the family of blood, that's another instance of that.
I was just going to say that RTD did say something about, you know, why he wasn't beholden to the book of human nature, which he loved, which we all like, Doctor Who fans everywhere loved it. And he thought it one of the best books of all time, like point blank, not even including Doctor Who age. But then he also said in a Doctor Who magazine interview, you know, no more than 20,000 people have read that book, you know, and Doctor Who is a show for millions. I'm sure maybe many more thousands have read The Star Beast, but it's still in the realm of thousands.
Yeah,
right?
Agreed.
And the show is millions, and the show is a worldwide audience now. So, well, yeah.
Also, the fans, we'll make up our own stuff, whether it's memory wipes or parallel universes or whatever. People who really want all these things to be in the same universe, you can figure out a way without needing the Doctor to know who Beep the Meep is in the 60th anniversary special. That's fine.
Yes. Yes.
So,
so it does also offer opportunities. I want to say as one perhaps closing thought is that, that there is this moment where the Doctor experiences pain beyond its human meaning. It does get a bit dark.
Right. When he's kind of got that crucifixion thing going on. Yeah. He's sort of nailed to the, or wrapped around the girders.
Yes, and he's taken into a nether realm where light is trapped, where time and space do not exist, experiencing pain beyond its human meaning. Now, one thing we know about the 14th Doctor is he is tortured. He doesn't know who he is. He's not having the best time of it.
Yeah. Tortured metaphorically, as far as we know.
Tortured metaphorically. But I do wonder, especially if this is all a Toymaker plot, like, are we not going to see more of Tennant being put through the ringer, you know, and perhaps this is a scene that will be drawn on and expanded perhaps in the anniversary specials. Because you have to build right to that, the second special, like the Doctor's going to go through some things at the hands of Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah. Right? Well, maybe the whole thing with the Black Sun drive is what gets the toy maker to arrive. Maybe they need some kind of rip in reality that this thing does. And then boom, you have the giggle, but first you got to go through Wild Blue Yonder, whatever that is, which has some kind of robot. It's all good. Yeah. So it's all speculative at this point. But we should probably start getting this wrapped up. And we usually have our four questions to Doomsday, but because the randomizer didn't take us here, if we have questions at all, it's going to be three questions to Doomsday. And I don't know if, let's just go for them. Like,
we can't really rate it. So really two questions.
We can rate it, but I mean, I suppose you're right. But what are the questions? What if the evil plot had succeeded?
Then the Meep makes his star jump, and Black Castle's destroyed.
Right. Maybe even the Earth.
Yes.
And Beep gets away.
Yeah.
Presumably the Doctor's dead, unless there's that whole thing where he gets in the TARDIS. Presumably that doesn't happen. And I guess the Rarath are probably destroyed too. So basically Beep wins and he plunders the galaxy and maybe even revives the Meeps as a race. And they're bad. So maybe they end up just conquering everything and going to war with the Daleks. I'd say a little Meep Dalek war. I'll get some popcorn for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they may be that we have not seen the Daleks with a very cute creature. And that strikes me as a potential Achilles heel for the Daleks that we don't know about. Like they can't handle extreme cuteness. How can you be so cute? Explain. Why do I want to stroke you? but also, you know what? I have to say something else about why I don't think like this would ever succeed. It's not just it's the Wrath has the ability to cut the Doctor down from his pain beyond human imagining there, but also like there's so many UNIT staff on hand here. But I think that this is why it fits in so neatly with what we know about the 60th special, that UNIT's in it, Kate Letchworth Stewart is back. UNIT is, albeit briefly, here in the plot already. So it's deep in the bones of the Star Beast. UNIT will save the day.
All right. We got one more question, and it is, where is the Clara Splinter?
The comic book Clara Splinter.
That's right. I think because Clara Oswald is splintered in time and she's in every single Doctor Who story, and it would be fun to see her yelling, Doctor, Doctor, in the Star Beast. I think she was here a long time ago, just ensuring that all British rooftops have a generous amount of flimsy, bendable lead.
That's right. She's stopping the campaign to remove the lead from everything that broke out in the 80s and just delaying it a little bit. wow, dark. How much lead poisoning are you responsible for, Clara? Just to save the Doctor.
Good stuff. I like it. So I guess we're not rating this, are we? We're not.
Well, I would say, in comic book terms, this is certainly a Viscount banger.
I think it's everything. You know what I mean? It's all the ratings. It's the fixed point in time. It's a bang. It's a banger. It's a total banger. It's the Star Beast. Come on, you guys. Yeah. How could you not love the Star Beast?
Exactly.
So there, if you need your rating, it's a double banger. Folks.
Or maybe it's a banger fixed point in time hybrid.
I hope you enjoyed our swing down into comic book memory lane with the Star Beast, and you are consider yourself totally ready for the real TV version. Thanks for listening for this extra special episode of Pull to Open. It's a podcast. Hey, if you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast, please do. We are available on all the good podcast services. You can also follow us on social. Like we said earlier, TikTok is a great place to do it. We're at Pull to Open, but we're also Pull to Open 63 on a whole bunch of other places. We're, of course, on YouTube, youtube.com/pulltoopen. Please subscribe. Please also turn on the notifications. That's good stuff. Thanks to Martin West for his music. And we will see you next time for our hot take on the televised version of the Star Beast.
I cannot wait to you lucky dogs in the future. I cannot wait. I'll join you soon. See you there.
Bye-bye.